So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
We've got five suspects. I want in pursuit.
They pulled off the perfect heist, but their escape just turned cold.
It's not good.
I don't think so.
What is going on here?
He had his hands on the girl.
You're going to help us cross the border by foot. She's dead if you don't.
You go 3 weeks without food out here, but only 3 days without water.
You really are Mr. Survival.
Just want to keep her safe.
So are you going to do something or what?
Now, his territory. His rules.
I can hear you.
Where are they going?
I don't know. I told them I was going to catch up.
Catch. But I hunt. I hunt to kill.
It's Review Away, everybody. John Pollock here, along with Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing here today?
Today? Pretty good. I'm pretty good. How are you?
Well, Wei, I went back this week and I watched at least half of the Kevin Dunn commentary on NXT. Boy, was this a... How did this get out?
I have no idea.
I think the WWE accidentally put it up on their YouTube channel or something like that.
No.
And then people, I think it was a mistake. Like, they didn't put this tape. They had to. It's not like someone could have just grabbed it.
I think it could have been a satellite interception of some sort. Could have been, I have no idea. But I don't think they would make that mistake of putting that up onto their YouTube. First of all, how would they even record that? It must have been some other party doing this.
Well, it was amazing just to watch this. 5 million times more entertaining than NXT. And just like the little comments, like, yeah. You hear Matt Stryker's like, and we will have another elimination tonight. And you hear this guy in the truck in the background, thank God. They're just burying this show.
Oh, yeah.
It's something else.
I don't know if Vince is necessarily on that team. It might just be Kevin Dunn, it sounds like.
No, that was the night of the election, and Vince wasn't there at the arena for that part. So usually it's Vince who's the one that is talking to Michael Cole and Josh Matthews.
Really? Even for NXT?
I think for everything Vince is on is there producing the announcers.
I get the feeling that NXT is so unimportant that Vince won't even stay for that.
I've always heard he does all the announcers, but you could be right in NXT maybe is not on his priority list to do the commentary. But that was the night of the election, could have seen Vince not being at the arena that night.
Maybe it just says something about me, but I kind of felt like the Kevin Dunn commentary track got in the way of the actual show for me. Like, I was actually more curious about what was going on in the actual show.
Did you watch, like, you just watched it once, right, with the Kevin Dunn commentary?
I watched about, like, the same amount as you. I watched about half of it.
Because, I wasn't paying attention to the show. I was listening to Kevin Dunn.
Yeah. I was just more curious from a television production standpoint how they do it, how they throw to the announcers. And just to be able to see what goes on behind the scenes of a WWE television broadcast. Did you,
get the kissing music on. It's going to be a good night for Hornswoggle.
There was a couple of years back where, a leaked script of Monday Night Raw.
An Impact script got out and maybe a Raw one did too. Yeah. I know for sure Impact got out.
I saved the Raw script somewhere.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, but just to see all that, it was it's really interesting to see how they put all that together. It must have changed a lot since then.
It is interesting just to if you ever want to get into the thought process of WWE and producing television the way they do. It's just like little things of just how they put such importance into things. Like when Hornswoggle is thrown away from the ring, mm-hmm. and it's like the money shot is his face. Let his face tell the story, and yeah. getting the camera yeah. on him and Absolutely. Stuff like that, and emphasizing the facials really and stuff like that.
For sure.
Just emphasizing very little things to make everything so precise. Like, you can say whatever you want about the WWE product. Their execution is mm-hmm. nearly flawless. Like, they think of everything down to the exact shot how they want things pronounced. Like, it is all well thought out.
They're very, very talented. And Kevin Dunn, I mean, especially to be able to lead that crew. Their switchers, their cameramen, everybody on that team is very – everything that they do – is deliberate, you know, like even though, you know, while watching it seems like maybe a lot of it seems to be spontaneous, but every camera shot, all the music, everything is just done very precisely and very well.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to go, Jay Hunter posted the whole thing. There's a download link up on the review.
Do you
want to
name
Facebook
him? Are you sure you want to name his name out there? Well, WWE can be after him.
Well, actually, he posted it publicly on our page, so he kind of put his name out there to this.
Jay Hunter, yeah, maybe Jay Hunter, perhaps more than anybody on our Facebook group. I mean, I know Justin Arthur sends us personally links, but Jay Hunter, he throws his name out there. He doesn't care at
all. Is it illegal for me to send you a link of something that's technically illegal, or is what they care about is those who are uploading it?
I don't know.
Because I've always been of the belief that it's much like drug trafficking. They're much more concerned if you're trafficking, you know, marijuana or steroids as opposed to just possession. If they find steroids on you, it's not a big deal. But if they find a guy who is distributing, that is always the more stringent offense.
Yes, so I guess Jay Hunter in this case would be the dealer.
Did he upload it?
I guess so. Well, he didn't upload it, but he's distributing it to our Facebook group.
It's an interesting. If we have any lawyers out there who can settle this for us, how legal is sharing pirated links online?
I'm sure it's fine.
But you can't technically purchase that NXT episode. It's just
You can.
Is it really pirated? It just wasn't meant to be up there. But if the WWE on their own accidentally fucked up and uploaded that, to me that's free game. You've thrown it out there, and now you're trying to put the toothpaste back into the tube, and that's not possible. Once it's out there, it's out there.
It's possible. You ever try that?
Putting toothpaste back in a tube?
Yeah.
Not possible.
If you had the right syringe, if you had a syringe?
No, you can. Toothpaste hardens quick. There's no way you can put it into a syringe and then inject it back into a tube.
You can
I am positive about this.
I don't.
More positive than the mountains. I believe we were going to do a review this week.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. The movie, everybody, Hunt to Kill. It's available now through Anchor Bay Entertainment, starring Stone Cold Steve Austin. And this past week, both Way and I watched this movie. And as you heard on The Law tonight, I had a chance to talk to Steve Austin about this movie, potential plans for WrestleMania, and a lot of mixed martial arts discussion as well. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the interview?
I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, it's all I could, you know. What can you say about it? What can you say?
Well, joining us later on in the program is Paul Lazenby, who was the stunt double for Steve Austin in this movie and also helped coordinate some of the fight scenes. Mm-hmm. And he's worked with Austin on a number of movies, including Damage and The Stranger. And they're actually going to be working on a show called Hangar 14 coming up shortly together. So they've worked together quite a bit now. So we'll hear from Paul coming up later on.
Paul Lazenby himself, a professional wrestler and former Pancrase fighter.
And he's going to be returning to the ring next year.
You're kidding.
To fight.
Wow.
Yes. That's all part of the interview. The whole interview with Paul Lazenby is about 30 minutes. So the whole thing will be online later this week, and we'll have a portion of it coming up later today in the show. And someone just walked by just to look inside and left. So let's get off here with our review, Way. Hunt to Kill. We start off, quote, somewhere near the border of Texas. And Austin is a border patrol officer named Jim Rhodes. And
was that his name?
Jim Rhodes.
Oh.
Yep.
Didn't even notice.
Like Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, yeah. You asked him a question about that.
And Austin didn't know who Jim Rhodes was either, so you're excused. So how do you want to go through this, Wei? I mean, do we want to just kind of pick out the highlights? Because I kind of did my standard review of just going right through the movie making notes.
No, don't do that. We'll just talk scene by scene, and don't feel like you have to get into specifics because, you know.
We
want people to watch this movie, don't
we? Okay, because I had written out the dialogue. I thought we'd just...
Oh, okay. Well, then get into the specifics. Why not?
I mean, line by line, I transcribed this whole movie for us. Here
you did? Okay, yeah. Let's reenact the whole thing.
Jim Rhodes is with his partner, who... what was his name? He was in The Expendables.
Eric Roberts.
His name. Yes. Is he well-known?
Oh, yeah.
What was he in before? I only know him from The Expendables.
Let me look at the back of the box. Eric Roberts, credited for The Dark Knight, and, as well as The Expendables.
Oh.
Amongst other things. This is Julia Roberts' brother.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I'm pretty sure.
Interesting.
Pretty sure he is. And he's been in a lot of things. But he's also an Academy Award nominee. So there you go. Oh. He was in the Killers video.
Which video?
Mr. Brightside.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's how I know.
Okay. So they go to inspect this trailer, Wei, and it's a toxic area. And I'm going to refer to him as Austin throughout the movie. He goes into the trailer, and there's an Asian guy and a black guy hiding. And they kill the partner of Austin, who had just announced that he was they were going to be retiring.
Yeah. All right. So this is how the review is going to
go. No, I don't. You set the pace, okay? I'm going scene by scene here.
Well, okay. You missed a very important point in the movie.
The watch?
The watch. Okay. Exactly.
Explain the significance of the watch.
Well, Roberts is in the car with Austin, and they're looking at this abandoned trailer. And then Roberts says, Austin, you know, I'm just going to call him Austin, too.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, Steve, you used to be a lot more focused back before your wife left you and left you with your kid.
A lot of exposition here.
Yes. And then Eric Roberts, because Eric Roberts says that Steve Austin is about to leave this job and go out to another job somewhere else. And as a going away gift, he gives Steve this watch. And so they go in, and then Roberts gets killed.
Yep, Roberts is killed. First scene, your Academy Award nominee was on a half-day rate. And we have the black guy and the Asian guy, and then, what was it, a Hispanic guy climbs out from this hidden part of the trailer. They all fight. Rhodes kills them. And there's this absolutely insane trailer explosion because, remember, this is all toxic.
Yes.
And... This was the cheesiest part. No, this was the second cheesiest part of the movie, where Austin is leaving the trailer just as it explodes, and this is the biggest trailer explosion I've ever seen in a movie. This thing was like a nuclear missile had just hit it, and of course Austin jumps as the explosion propels him.
In slow motion.
Yeah, time stood still.
Austin is like maybe... 5 inches.
5 frames per second.
5 inches away from the flames, just like inches away from the flame as he's jumping through the air. And of course, Austin just makes it, but he's knocked out from the huge leap.
And then we cut to Austin in the same position, but it's in Lowry, Montana, where...
4 years later.
4 years later.
4 years have passed, and I guess he's out in his new... job, and we learn that his new job is that of a forest ranger of some sort.
Yes, but you see, Wei, they transition the 4 years where he's in the same position, and that's probably subtly telling us that time has evolved, but he is the same man he was back then, still affected by that day.
Oh my God.
Come on, why would they put that exact same position to...
I don't know.
Transition to.
The whole point of this scene was just to show Austin walking through the woods so they can put the credits.
The longest title sequence ever, as Austin just walked around with a crossbow.
Yeah, that was it.
And then he finally fires a shot, and we cut to Reno, Nevada, and there's a police chase. And we get this, we are introduced to Geary, this wacky tech guy, who orchestrated a bank heist using voice alterations to fool the police and stole unregistered bonds. And he's got a whole team. Because when you rob a bank in a movie, it's always a team of guys.
Of course it is. You can't do it by yourself.
I didn't get names here. So I labeled them old Sean Connery guy, hot chick, Matthew Broderick looking guy, who ended up being the main heel in this movie.
Yeah, Gil Bellows.
Gil Bellows.
From The Shawshank Redemption.
And the black guy in the suit. Yes. So they get back to the warehouse that they were all going to meet after this big heist. Old man takes off, and we have the hot chick is apparently fucking Sean Connery.
Yeah. Okay.
Whoa.
The guy.
Explain. What? Well, you're cutting me off here.
You have to hit on the actual story points, not just you know what actually happens.
Okay. Well, the what are the story points?
Okay.
Tell us.
The whole heist was actually orchestrated by the Sean Connery looking old guy, and so Gil Bellows, the guy who ends up being the main heel, he's this younger guy, and then Gil Bellows is about to drop off the truck that they all came back into the office or into the headquarters with, and then the old guy's like, "No, Gil, it's all right. I'll take the truck." And then Gil Bellows is like, "You're gonna take it? Since when didn't you trust me?" And then the old guy's like, it's all right. But then Gil Bellows, we get like a close up of him, and then we get like some suspicious music, and Gil Bellows is very suspicious of this old man's actions. So he plants this chip, some sort of, I don't know, homing tracking device on the old guy. So then the old guy leaves. Meanwhile, the rest of the team is back in the headquarters about to open up their stash, which they stole like $10 million worth of
unregistered bonds.
They're about to open the duffel bag of unregistered bonds,
and surprise,
it's a bomb,
not just an empty bag. He went to the trouble of putting a bomb in there for these guys.
This was a bomb that was hooked up to a cell phone. And then immediately they see it and they're like, "No, once he calls, we're gonna blow up." And so immediately Gil Bellows grabs a pair of scissors or a knife, and we get the cliched
which wire
do I cut?
Ever seen a movie outside of like MacGruber where they've cut the wrong wire? Never have they cut the wrong wire.
No, of course not. So yes, they somehow defuse the bomb right before the phone call comes,
and then they answer the phone.
Gil Bellows actually answers the phone, and he says, "Yeah, we're still alive, motherfucker. We're coming after you."
And he says, "We're going to get that motherfucker, and we're going to get our money back." Then we go to a cabin, Way, where we are introduced to Gina Carano, who is the daughter of Steve Austin.
No, it was not Gina Carano.
Looked like Gina Carano.
In every action movie, there must be some teenage daughter of the main guy. We saw it in the Rob Van Dam movie. We saw it in Last Action Hero. Whatever.
Wow, you just skipped back to a 94.
All right, whatever.
Movie.
I like that movie a lot. But anyway, it just seems like teenage daughter is the perfect age and type of girl that just seems vulnerable enough, but at the same time can defend herself. You know, like, you can't really have a little boy, you can't really have a teenage boy, because
it's the ultimate baby face, a teenage daughter.
Teenage daughter, yeah. You can't have a girl that's too young, but, because you can't beat up a really young girl, but a teenage girl is fine.
So, we get the relationship is a little strained right now, because the daughter wanted to go on a vacation for her winter break with her friends, and Austin said, "Hell no." And they're gonna spend 2 weeks together. What could happen in 2 weeks? And the daughter is all pissed off because her car is not working. Austin fixes the car.
Yeah.
She does not thank him.
She's a
spoiled little
brat.
She's
rebellious. She's going through her rebellious phase, and she doesn't like the fact that her dad is such a country, like a forest wild, you know.
She calls him the Davy Crockett of Border Patrol.
That's right.
So then instantly after the car leaves, we go to a scene where the sheriff calls up Austin and has the daughter sitting there because she has been caught yet again for shoplifting.
Right.
And Austin is more annoyed than upset here. And he says he's going to come in and take care of this. But you see, the sheriff happened to be working at the exact same place where the bank criminals were going to come in and cause problems.
Yes, the bank criminals have tracked this Sean Connery into this town that Austin was patrolling. And so they go to the sheriff's place, and they immediately kidnap the sheriff with their guns, and subsequently their Austin's daughter as well. Austin finally arrives, and then he walks into this scene, and we're immediately faced off between Austin and the Ocean's 11.
And Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Yes. So when Austin shows up at the sheriff's office, he doesn't make mention that they have his daughter hostage. To them, this is just a random girl, and this random guy has just walked in. And Austin says, well, if you're looking for somebody in the woods, that being the old guy, well, he knows the woods very well, and he can help them. But he wants them not to harm the girl. And Gil Bellows says that, God forbid you fuck us in the forest, then her blood is on your hands. Can you dig it?
Sucker.
So we are off to an excursion way in the forest.
Well, okay, hold on. He also kills the sheriff right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gil Bellows shoots the sheriff in the forehead.
Shoots him in the head. Just
well,
the...
you had to kill him because...
Why?
You couldn't take this guy on your trip.
That's true.
And if you left him there, then you'd have a search party out for these guys. So he needed to be eliminated. He was fat.
Right, okay. But why didn't Gil Bellows just kill Austin?
Because Austin knows the woods, and he is lost in the woods without this guy. He needs him to help him get to his intended target.
That's right.
All made perfect sense today. So we're out in the woods way for what felt like forever, and actually was for the rest of the movie. They would spend the time in the forest. Daughter needs to go to the bathroom. There's a lot of... there's a lot of fighting.
We're used to reviewing wrestling. We're not really Roger.
What are you talking about?
Ebert.
Well,
or Siskel. And
no one else out there does a 45-minute review of a movie, though.
Is this gonna get people to want to watch this movie afterwards?
That's not the goal. We are reviewing. We are not previewing.
Okay. All right. So anyway, yeah. So yeah, the girl has to go to the take a piss, but then we hear her scream, and it turns out
it's the black guy, right?
The black guy, his name's Crab. He's sort of the fuck up of the crew. He goes and he tries to rape Austin's daughter.
Oops!
And so Austin hears this and just runs over there and beats the shit out of Crab.
He twisted his arm, and you had this loud crunch sound effect, yeah. And then he did the same thing to his leg.
Oh, it was great. I love it. This is very satisfying to hear, to see Austin actually break this dude's limbs. Meanwhile, at the same time, before Crab attacked Austin's daughter, he also slapped the woman of the team, of the heist team.
The hot chick.
Yeah, the hot chick, who's actually the girlfriend of the leader of the team. And so when Gil Bellows comes over and sees this, he's like, did you attack her? And then so he shoots the black guy. And so now we're at least down one bad guy for them to...
Yeah, so now we're down to Banks, who is the main guy, the hot chick, and we had Geary. And was there another guy? Oh, yeah. Then there was...
The kickboxer.
Eric Roberts.
No,
Eric Daniels. Gary Daniels,
who is supposed to be a...
Former kickboxer.
Former kickboxing champion.
Also in The Expendables.
Yeah.
Then we got the scene where they just randomly found this dead body in the woods, which I didn't understand. And it was all for this setup of Rhodes saying that...
Well, the dead body was Austin's colleague that you heard from earlier. His name was Walt.
His colleague?
Yeah. Remember, like, when Austin, after Austin drops, fixes the daughter's car, he calls in to check up on his work to see if, work needs him. And his colleague's like, no, Steve, you gotta stay at home. You should enjoy your day off.
Oh. Well, why was he out in the woods?
Because that's his job.
to patrol the woods.
So are we to believe that Sean Connery killed him?
Yeah, that's what they said.
Oh.
Austin sees the dead body and somehow, from looking at all the evidence there, is able to deduce down to precisely exactly what happened.
Yeah, he did like a whole Dexter breakdown here.
Yeah, he sees his friend's dead body and he says, your boy must have killed him. Your boy was, I guess, Walt here was his, tried to stop him from going to Canada. And so somehow he sees that he's able to deduce that they had a fight, that Sean Connery was shot and wounded in the process, and he's able to track exactly where he's going.
You watched this movie way more intently than I did, I will admit that. Then Lawson just yells into the mountains, "We're coming to get you, motherfucker!"
No. His name's Banks. Lawson was Sean Connery. Lawson is a Sean Connery.
Oh, he yells at Lawson. That's my mistake. Sorry. Banks yells this in the mountains.
Gil Bellows. Yes.
And then we see Lawson sitting by a waterfall, and he's bleeding from the mouth from this fight. And they find Lawson, like, moments later. And I'm thinking, oh, movie's done. And Lawson says the money is gone. And Dawn, the hot chick, ends up shooting him twice.
Yeah.
He's dead.
But the money is gone. So the movie still continues because they're looking for the money.
And then they look down the waterfall, and there's the duffel bag with the money.
Yeah.
And someone has to go down there and get it, and Austin offers to go down. But he takes the watch off that we saw at the beginning, and somehow the wrist part portion becomes a bungee cord.
The band of the watch.
Same thing. Becomes a bungee cord.
Yeah.
He had a bungee cord on his wrist. This was the greatest watch ever.
This is the coolest watch, yes, but impossible to exist in real life. Yeah, this was a watch where the band was made up of a stitched bungee cord that somehow it turns into the length of an entire cliff for him to rappel down. So Austin rappels down the length of this cliff and retrieves the bag and then painstakingly climbs back up.
Stumbles at one point. He's got this nasty, like, bruise on his thumbnail.
Right.
Looked incredibly painful.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I guess Paul Lazenby did a lot of work in scenes like this.
Yes, throughout all of the fight scenes, and I would imagine for a lot of this, especially the rock climbing scenes.
Falling down a cliff.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Austin's character takes a ton of punishment in this movie. Oh, like, very painful.
Yeah. In action movies are like video games. You know, your main characters always have multiple lives.
Very true. As he climbed up, I don't think there was one person watching this movie who did not foresee what was about to occur. He gets to the top, and everyone thought, oh, he'll give them the money, he'll get his daughter, movie over. Wrong. They decided instead to cut his cord, take the money, and he fell down the entire side.
They shot him, too.
And shot him on the way down.
Yeah. Shot him.
Fell like 100 feet down this cliff.
Fell down the
cliff.
Was
shot.
And they're like, haha, we're going to take your daughter, too. And like, why didn't they just kill the daughter? Well, okay. Well, this is why they didn't kill the daughter. The daughter says, don't kill me. Let me ask you one question. Do you even know which way is north? And then Gil Bellows is like, no, you're right. Good job.
So their stupidity is going to preserve her life.
Yeah.
Then we got the Three Stooges scene where the girl spits in Geary's face. Then Geary punches her. Dawn gets upset at this and punches Geary. And Geary pulls out a taser. And finally, Dawn slices Geary's leg with a sword and then is pistol whipped by Banks. And they leave Geary for dead in the woods. And he remains alive and he has all of their food.
Yeah. So that's another one down, basically. The infighting causes another member of their team.
This was like Fortune.
Right. Sure.
Austin is alive. Looks remarkably well for a man that just took the beating that he just did. And I guess is bulletproof. So Austin is alive, and now he's pissed. And he creates a murder weapon out of wood. He looks incredibly clean shaven at this point.
Yeah, he climbs back up from the cliff and he sees Sean Connery left a bag, left a crossbow at the scene right there. And so he sees this bag and he's suddenly very happy. He cleans himself up, puts on the war paint that's also in the bag.
Under a very heavy drum instrumental.
That's right. And then he just like this Batman like contraption was this crossbow. And so now he's armed with the crossbow and now he's on the hunt to kill.
He's on the hunt, everybody. His first victim is Geary, who is still alive at this point. Austin basically transforms into a serial killer here, going one by one. He fires multiple shots at Geary. They talk back and forth with Geary pleading for his life, and Austin shoots him in the heart. And
after telling Austin where they were headed, after getting all the information from him. That's right.
We go back to Austin's daughter, who tells us her motto, stop. When you're in the woods, stop, think, observe, plan. Stop.
Okay. Meanwhile, she sees that there's a arrow formed in the rocks. There are some rocks buried on the ground that were formed in the shape of an arrow. And so she's suddenly very happy because she somehow realizes that this was her dad trying to point her in the right direction.
Did not pick up on that at all.
Yeah.
I'm glad I have you for these reviews.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. But yes, yeah, so the girl is happy to somehow realize that her dad's alive, and so she leads these bad guys down the exact path that Austin, somewhere in hiding, wants them to go.
And then as they walk off, there's this giant tree stump, and Austin just rises from the tree stump, mm-hmm. and it looks awesome.
Yes. So at some point, the kickboxer amongst them,
Jensen.
He stops to have a cigarette, leaving him behind with the rest of the crew. And so Austin and the kickboxer, they have their fight, their big fight scene.
This was the best fight scene of the whole movie.
Yeah? Yeah, sure.
It featured a triangle armbar by Jensen off of his back, but Austin lifts him, and then they move over to stick fighting. And it ends with Austin shoving a piece of wood right through him.
Yeah. That seemed to be the method of killing throughout this movie.
Yep.
Just shoving a stick through a guy's heart.
The next kill was Dawn, who takes a javelin piece of wood right through her chest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that brings us down to the main event, Banks and Austin. Austin is shot by Banks and falls down these rocks. But he climbs back up.
His second fall off a cliff.
Well, after the first one, it's really not that impressive.
That's right, yeah. It's easy. You can train for this, stuff like that.
They battle through this abandoned warehouse. They fall down the largest set of stairs ever. Then there's a gore off of the ledge to the ground. But Austin, this was weird, because Austin takes the spear off the ledge. But when they land, Austin's on top of him.
What do you... Oh, okay, okay. So yeah, maybe, because they rolled. He's able to roll and use the other guy as his cushion. He swept. He did a sweep.
Austin gets up. He walks out of the abandoned warehouse, and we think that this is the end. And he re-embraces his daughter. And then Banks walks out of the abandoned warehouse stating, "You can't kill me! You can't kill me!" And then the line of the entire movie way. Austin gets on his ATV, starts revving it up, and says, "Why not? I hunt to kill." And then he runs over Banks.
With his ATV. He pops a wheelie on his ATV and just rams the thing into this dude, and you hear gushing.
I had tears in my eyes during this scene right after he says, "Why not? I hunt to kill." Then he shoots a flare gun off. It explodes.
Another explosion.
Rhodes and his daughter love each other. They're going on a vacation, and they leave.
You remember, like, do you ever watch Power Rangers?
Yes.
Like, I used to watch it, and my brother would sometimes... My brother is, like 12 years older than me. So, like, I used to watch this as a kid. And then, at the end, the bad guys would... When they died, they would always somehow explode.
Yes.
Even if they were flesh, they would explode into flames. Yeah.
The Putty Patrol.
But like, and so my brother's like, why do they always explode? Like, where is there gasoline on any of these creatures? And this was like that. This was just like that. Anytime you shoot somebody, there's just a huge chemical explosion, no matter what.
So that was Hunt to Kill, everybody. Did you enjoy this movie, Wei?
Well, I loved our review of it even more.
Do you think this is the movie might have been better than the review?
Yeah, I thought, you know what, whenever I watch wrestling, whenever I watch a wrestling actor in a movie, my expectations are immediately lowered. I'm not gonna judge this against the Shawshank Redemption.
Fuck, I was gonna say that movie.
Well,
that was a good comparison.
Well, yeah.
I don't know why we thought of that.
Because it's
telepathy.
The name Shawshank Redemption is just like, you can't get more of a official, you know,
Schindler's List credible
movie. Okay, yes, this is not Schindler's List. So I thought it was entertaining. Sure, why not? I think Austin was.
I think he has a role as doing action movies and stuff like this. I don't know. He's talked about wanting to veer off and do some comedy and stuff. I think this is his niche.
Yeah, but it's just so predictable, though. Like, there's nothing. This movie was just a generic action movie starring a familiar face in Steve Austin.
But how many action movies are just as predictable that do?
They're all predictable, and that's why
it's a simple formula.
I don't watch action movies, and then if I wasn't reviewing this, I would have absolutely no interest in watching this movie. Maybe at least a comedy with Austin would be different. And I thought Austin actually, he showed a little bit of some personality here with some of his delivery of his lines. He has some good comedic timing, and I think he would do well. I think this script is, there weren't a lot of plot holes. It wasn't like that Rob Van Dam movie where, I don't know. This was better than that.
There were
Rob
no
Van
swerves
movie.
In this movie. And I found that refreshing. Like, there was no, guys just turning on Austin who were secretly not working for him. And
yeah, it was straightforward.
I was fine with that.
But, I'm interested to see what else Austin can do aside from just simple fighting, climbing back up cliffs multiple times and not dying.
So I give this movie, I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Yourself?
I give it a 4.
All right, a 4. We're going to hear now from Paul Lazenby. He was the stunt double for Austin on this movie, and he has worked on a number of movies with Austin, done a lot of fight coordination on multiple movies. He's got a huge laundry list of projects he has worked on, and we'll go hear from Paul right now about the shooting of Hunt to Kill. The movie is called Hunt to Kill, and it's available now through DVD and Blu-ray, starring Steve Austin and one of the men working on this project, Paul Lazenby, a good friend here of the show, and it's always a good time catching up with Mr. Lazenby. And how are you doing today, Paul?
Really good, man. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well, and I just watched Hunt to Kill this week. And my first question is, have you had a chance to see the finished project yet?
No, I've been to the video store 3 times, and it's been out every time, so I guess that's a good sign. Yeah, but not a good sign for me because I want to see the damn thing.
So now you and Steve have worked now on a number of projects together. I believe your first movie together was Damage. You just wrapped up The Stranger. So I guess you and Steve now have definitely developed quite a rapport working with each other. Tell us a bit about some of the evolution you've seen just in Steve in making the transition.
You mean as far as him being an actor?
Yeah, in terms of the acting and also taking to the work you two have done together stunt-wise.
Well, he's definitely got an extremely open mind. I mean, you get a wide range of egos in the film industry. And you could very easily see a scenario where you get this guy who is the number one money generator in the history of the wrestling business coming into the acting business and acting like a big shot. And in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. Steve came in and was openly saying from day one on Damage, hey, I'm a new guy here. I'm just looking to learn. You know, anybody's got any advice, I would love to hear it. And he's had that attitude ever since. You know, I've helped him work on his film fighting a little bit because it does, while there are a lot of similarities between film fighting and pro wrestling, there are some very big differences too. And he's been a very, very avid student in cleaning up his film fighting and also his acting. You know, he said a few times that in the early going, he would be sleeping on set. We would have location shoots out in the middle of Squamish with, where it's way out in the middle of nowhere, and he'd sleep in his trailer. And he said he'd be laying there and in the middle of the night thinking, damn, I wish I just had that one take over again. So I guess it's indicative of the work ethic that took him to the very top of the wrestling business, but I got nothing but good things to say about the effort he's put forward into his film career, and I think it's bearing fruit. I think he's getting better with every movie.
In this movie, outside of the opening scene where it features the trailer blow-up of all trailer blow-ups, as I'd like to refer to it as, throughout the movie, you see a lot of, it's more or less a lot of hand-to-hand combat, and I guess more of an approach to make the fight scenes as realistic as possible. As someone that's worked as a fight coordinator for video games as well as movies, tell us a bit about your kind of mindset when it comes to putting together fight scenes, because, of course, you have a background in combat sports, and does that somewhat help with the transition over to movies, or is it a completely different game when you're putting together a fight scene for a movie?
Well, I was really lucky because I started as a professional wrestler, and then I became a mixed martial artist, and so when I moved from wrestling into fighting, I always had an eye toward how to make certain techniques look good, because the bottom line is you will meet a lot of fighters, and this is one thing that bothers me, is now that MMA is hot, everybody's falling all over themselves to get high-profile MMA fighters into their movies. Mm-hmm. But some of them are good and some of them are not, because just a lot of stuff that works in actual fighting looks like crap on film. And there are some fighters who find it impossible to change gears, so to speak, to understand the difference between the two. So in that case, I was a little bit lucky having just the right skill set to come into stunts and bring an actual fighting element into fight scenes. And in the early days, it was tough because I started stunts around 2000. And a lot of stunt coordinators, the old school mentality is once a fight goes to the ground, it's over in a film fight. And I was trying to get them to introduce ground fighting elements and everything. No, it'll slow the fight scene down. It's not going to look good. It's going to look like garbage. But there were certain coordinators, first and foremost, James Bamford, the current president of Stunts Canada, who would call me up and say, look, you know, I want to do some ground stuff in this fight scene for Jeremiah or Stargate Atlantis or whatever. So we managed to get up. You know, I'd go down and I showed Rainbow Franks, one of the stars of Stargate Atlantis, how to do a flying armbar. He had a breakdancing background, and he did it to me on the show. We had a rolling guillotine neck crank, a rolling crucifix neck crank in Jeremiah that Malcolm Jamal Warner did to one of the stunt performers. So we were gradually moving a mixed martial arts element into film fighting, and I think the movie industry is now starting to catch up, in some ways good, in some ways bad. But as far as this movie's concerned, it was really refreshing because they had a very open mind toward it. With Gary Daniels being on the movie, you know, he was kind of invested in the Hong Kong fighting style, so we included some elements in that, but I was able to have an active hand in putting a lot of those fight scenes together. And, of course, Steve, being a huge MMA fan, he was very open to any MMA techniques we wanted to include.
Yes, and that included in the fight scene with Gary Daniels, we actually see a triangle armbar by Gary Daniels in the actual fight scene. And I think that's proof positive right there of kind of the influence of mixed martial arts that's permeating not only, you know, when fight fans are watching a movie, but this is you're seeing elements of mixed martial arts now just in kind of when you read, you know, stories in the newspaper about fights breaking out at bars. And I think it's widely much more accepted than even, I would say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, most definitely. And it was kind of funny because Gary Daniels, even at 45, he can do some things that I will never be able to do. I wouldn't be able to do on my best day 20 years ago. But he'll readily admit it. He said, look, I'm a Hong Kong film fighter. I'm not a mixed martial artist. So he was literally laying on the ground and saying, Paul, could you please come over here and walk me through this step by step? Because I don't even know how to put this on. But he made it look damn good. And interesting trivia note, right up until we went to camera, that role was supposed to go to Anderson Silva.
Really?
But he got hurt, and they ended up switching in Gary Daniels instead, and I think he did a great job.
Oh, wow, that's a very interesting trivia note. That's where we go right to the source here, Paul Lazenby. And where was this all shot in Vancouver?
It was shot in Squamish, which is just outside of Vancouver, about an hour's drive, and it's it was a lot of fun. Squamish is not that much fun to shoot outside.
I was going to say, like, the majority of this is all in the woods, so I imagine it would have been some long days out there.
Yeah, long, cold, wet, rainy days. The fight scene where Steve happens upon the character who was trying to rape his daughter, that I don't know if it shows on the film yet, but that was unbelievable. It was just gushing buckets. And I've got to take my hat off to Marie, the girl who played Steve's daughter. I'm not even going to try to pronounce her last name because there's some Greek thing that's going to spray in my tongue. But, you know, she completely destroyed the myth of all actresses being high-maintenance little bitches because she was laying on her back in between takes getting ready for these scenes, and it was literally like somebody pouring a bucket of water in her face all the time, and she didn't complain once.
Now, the director, Keone Waxman, had you ever worked with him before?
Yeah, I worked with him on Steven Seagal movie, worked with him on, I think, three movies now. I love working with that guy. He's a really, really easy guy to get along with, to work with, and I'm hoping to do it again in the future. Keone just, I think that guy, I'd like to see him do really well because he commands the set without being a douchebag and ordering people around in an imperious manner, and he's really good at what he does.
Now, we were chatting with Steve earlier this week discussing the movie, and inevitably all of these interviews he's doing, people asking him about any potential offers for WrestleMania next year, because, Paul, you look right now on paper, and the WWE really doesn't have that big attraction for next year, and you've got to imagine that some offer is going to come Steve's way. I mean, do you have any indication of Steve if that's something he's closed the door to, or something that with the right offer he would be willing to listen?
I don't think he's entirely closed the door on it. Well, the fact that he did an appearance at Cyber Sunday during the filming of Damage shows that he's willing to go back from time to time. As far as wrestling a match, I know that he's been making some cryptic comments lately saying, well, maybe I got one more in me. But at this time, I don't know that Steve has any intention of going back for WrestleMania. And you're right, they're kind of desperate. Speaking of that, actually, that funny story about Damage. It was actually on the night that I got my nose broken during that fight scene with Steve. But he had a brutal schedule. He was working all week, and then he had to jump on a plane late Friday night, go out for Cyber Sunday, fly back home Sunday, get home late Sunday night, and then be back on set Monday morning.
Wow.
So he was in brutal shape. And that's when they were doing the gimmick where there were three potential referees, Steve, Shawn Michaels, and somebody else, and the fans are going to vote for whoever they wanted as the guest ref. And we're in the car, we're driving from set back to Circus where the trailers are and everything, and Steve's looking really tired, and he looks up and goes, damn, I spent $200 of my own money voting for Shawn Michaels just to get out of this damn thing.
You mentioned that you recently just finished work on the sci-fi show Sanctuary along with Adam Copeland. You're currently involved in the Dead Rising 2 video game that's available now. You also worked on EA Sports MMA. What else is in the ever-increasing pipeline for Paul Lazenby coming up?
Right now, I'm going to be doubling Steve Austin again. He is coming up here in a couple of days to work on a show called Hangar 14, where he's playing the leader of a SWAT team. And actually, Keith Jardine is going to be working on that one, too.
Oh, that's cool.
And on top of that, I'm working on a movie called This Means War, just playing a garden variety thug. I will be auditioning tonight for the role of an inmate on Human Target. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that because I've got the script in front of me, and it looks like a role that I'm pretty suited to, so I'm hoping that they give me the green light on that one. And other than that, I might be headed out your way soon. I have to do some voiceover work for the score, so I might be going out to Toronto within the next couple of weeks as well. So it's going to be busy, and that's exactly the way I like it. I hope it keeps coming.
And apparently, according to your website, you're going to be returning to the ring in 2011. Is this true?
Yeah. I'm getting pretty long on the tooth, and I want to get one or two more fights in. I mean, first of all, because my MMA record absolutely sucks. I'm on an 8-fight win streak, but only one of those fights is an MMA fight. So right now I'm a 1-6 fighter. And I'd like to get a couple more wins before I hang them up. Plus, I've actually never had a fight in a cage, and that's always bugged me. All my MMA fights have been in rings.
Oh.
So through the course of calling the score fighting series, I saw this guy, Bruno Hosier, former French Foreign Legionnaire, very raw fighter, but really tough guys, 4-1 with 4 knockouts. And I figure I could be competitive with him. That would be a fight where maybe I'd kick his ass and maybe he'd kick mine, and that's exactly where the kind of opponent I want. So I've cleared it with the score, and I'm just waiting on a call back from Warrior One promoter Jack Bateman to get this one underway. He's already told me that he's definitely in favor of the fight, and then it should be happening around February or March of next year.
And that was Paul Lazenby, everybody. You can get more information on him at paullazenby.com. And we're going to be giving away a copy of Hunt to Kill Way on Blu-ray
courtesy of Anchor Bay Entertainment, and it's going to be really simple. All you have to do is follow Law Radio on Twitter and send us three movies that Paul Lazenby has worked on. Simple question. Three movies that Paul Lazenby has worked on. The first person to tweet this to @LawRadio will be getting a Blu-ray copy of Hunt to Kill. It would help if you have a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, or PlayStation.
I cannot tell you how funny it is when we give away like Ring of Honor tickets for Mississauga and we get people entering from like Detroit who cannot come to the show. Hilarious.
No,
so funny.
Yeah.
So there you go, everybody. Your chance to win Hunt to Kill on Blu-ray. And I guess we'll get into our feedback now, Wei. We got quite a bit here. And we'll start off with Joe Dugan. And he writes, Wei Ting is my favorite wrestling radio / podcast host. Everyone else seems too negative, which can be entertaining at times, but I would prefer seeing the bright side of things more times than not. I agree, Wei. You're a tremendous host.
Okay. Patrick McHugh. Review and Impact was a fun show. Impact itself is a god-awful show most of the time. At this point, I watch it more out of habit than anything. One question, though. Why is Matt Morgan getting a world title match? I think the last time he won a match in TNA was sometime in August.
That's a silly question. We established this rule last week, everybody, and I think it makes TNA much more easily to digest. Don't assume one thing leads to another.
Right.
Think backwards. It works better.
So if I was a competitor in TNA, what's my motivation?
Don't worry about winning a match. Winning and losing is, well, losing is almost more important than winning. Don't ever, I would never, if I was a competitor, I would never trust my closest friends.
Okay. All right. Maybe if I was a competitor in TNA, I would not care about winning or losing my matches as much as I would about getting attention. I would just want to get attention, either by leaving the faction that I was aligned with for most of the year, or just getting giving a guy a concussion, maybe. Just a bit, get attention.
I would want to
get a title shot.
I would want to face the guys that have kind of the least, I guess, book smarts about them, because the matches can be so confusing into how you can win them when it's a heavy stipulation match that you can just, you have them beat mentally already heading into a match because of the confusion
I'm already confused.
There you go. I just succeeded, Wei. I'm a better TNA wrestler than you.
Yeah.
Alex R. Stephanie. Hello, guys. Is it me or is Impact a much better show to review than Monday Night Raw? It sounded like you two were in good spirits on Friday. I find Monday Night Raw to be a better wrestling program, but it's stuck in neutral except for a Miz or Wade Barrett promo. Nothing exciting happens anymore. Sometimes TNA is really stupid, but at the same time, you can see they are trying to bring different elements to wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't know if it's good elements they're bringing to wrestling.
There's some good elements, like I, you know, mentioned that the shoot style promos. I like that.
Perhaps.
Right.
They haven't proven to be effective yet. There might be different.
How do you gauge whether or not those are effective?
If people are watching the product, what are these promos trying to accomplish?
Well, no one's gonna watch a product strictly for the production style, but. See, like, for example, I took a chance. I was forced to basically watch the product. And after watching the product, I noticed that this was an element that I did enjoy.
All right.
Well, I'm too positive. I'm sorry.
That'll change.
Traverse.
Give it a few weeks.
Traverse Cummings. Well, looks like Review and Impact is going to be another winner. Good first show, guys, but I am definitely looking forward to hearing these. I've tuned out of Impact as of late, but recently got back into it. I like what they're doing with the Immortal Group. Only problem I have with it is that there are too many guys in the stable. It looks like one of the EV2 guys might defect over to Immortal on the pay-per-view, so the stable might be even bigger. That didn't happen. Right? My money is on Kendrick since he's really a part of the EC. He's not a part of the ECW originals anyway. Thanks to Matt Morgan, if I ever needed a new job, all I have to do is give the carbon footprint to someone and steal their contract. That seems a lot easier than going through an interview. Keep up the good work.
Jordan Ducharme. I just listened to Review and Impact, and it was so fucking funny. It's the type of humor that I know not many people will understand, but I'm glad I do. So, so funny.
That sounds sarcastic.
So, so funny.
So funny. Like in capitals.
So funny.
Maybe all these people are just making fun of us.
They maybe are.
Hearing us. Ahmad Buttons. I'm listen to this sarcastic comment. I'm re-listening to the review of Wrong Side of Town. I don't think this can get old. You guys have to review all the wrestlers' movies, which we just did.
It's amazing how we can read these and make them sound like however we want it to.
Yeah. Anyway, next one.
To Kevin Sullivan, oh, this comes from Jack Pisco. To Kevin Sullivan or his lookalike and anyone else who's looking at John and Way through the glass during the reviews, stop it right now. It's not a zoo. They are men. It's not a zoo. They are men.
I wouldn't say Kevin Sullivan this week. I'd say more of a Bastion Booger.
That could not have been more well-timed.
Because as John was reading that, we had Bastion Booger look us right in through the glass as we're speaking right now. Very awkward.
Go to the next one.
Mark Robinson, just the correct way, the first pay-per-view of the brand extension was actually April 2002 with Backlash. The first brand-specific pay-per-view was actually Bad Blood 2003, a Raw show headlined by Kevin Nash versus Triple H in a Hell in a Cell for the World Heavyweight Championship with Mick Foley as the referee. Thank you for that correction. I guess I somehow...
Yeah, I do remember it now. When they first did the brand split, they didn't want to split up the pay-per-views, and then they waited till the next year, and specifically the Raw pay-per-views were just... Those ones were tough ones to sit through.
Yeah.
Mark Robinson, just to correct... Oh, sorry. Ewan Ross. I'd really like you guys to do some older pay-per-views. I really do enjoy the Attitude Era reviews you guys do, but I'd love to hear some more classic reviews from the early 90s or the late 80s. It would at least be a change of pace.
Sure. It's been a while since we've done one of those. Andy Gordon, just finished your Survivor Series 2002 review. Why was Scott Steiner on that show? I recently ordered a Nexus shirt and a pendant, but I don't think it's pewter. Could you guys please review TNA Victory Road 2004? That was their first three-hour show back when they were great. So why was Scott Steiner on that show, John?
Well, they had just signed him. That was his debut.
Yeah. And I guess...
He was fine on that show. He came out, he got a huge pop, and...
He was... if you remember back on that... Final Nitro, that Raw when Vince McMahon came out on the Final Nitro, Scott Steiner was one of the names, along with Buff Bagwell, of all people.
Buff Bagwell got that huge reaction.
Yeah, Scott Steiner, too. He was one of the people that got one of the bigger reactions. So that was the reason for this entire run, I guess. They thought they could make some money off of him.
From Biggest Fan Review Away. Hey dudes, love the review of Survivor Series 02. Great stuff per usual. Funny that you mentioned HBK's bad haircut and horrible indie looking tights. In the 2007 WWE DVD release, the Shawn Michaels story, Heartbreak and Triumph, there's a part where Jericho actually rips on HBK in a lighthearted way for having a horrible bob hairstyle and poop brown tights. Not sure if it was a deleted scene or on the main documentary, but it was funny stuff as always by Jericho. Keep up the great work, dudes. I'd love to see you guys do some Christmas holiday themed shows coming up if you can. Holla, still the biggest Raw mark walking.
That's right. Very good. Thank you.
What holiday themed shows could we do?
Oh, well, we did Santa with Muscles last year.
Oh, that's right.
There's last week was Remembrance Day. What other holidays? We have American Thanksgiving coming up.
I guess that's mostly associated with Survivor Series.
Yeah. Okay. Have there ever been any Thanksgiving themed episodes of Survivor Series?
Well, yeah, that's because Survivor Series used to always be on the eve of Thanksgiving. They used to do the pay-per-views on a Wednesday night, the night before Thanksgiving. So that's why they always called it the Thanksgiving night tradition or something like that. Okay.
Jeremy Levine was at Raw Live this week. Regal wasn't used on... We had a lot, when I say a lot, I guess. We had two pieces of feedback from people
attendance. I put them both in here.
Yeah.
Anytime you go live, we'll read your feedback.
Absolutely. Was at Raw Live this week. This is an exclusive Reveal Away live attendance report, courtesy of Jeremy Levine. Regal wasn't used on Superstars, but on a dark match with Alex Riley, winning with a running knee. Obviously, booking for two British wrestlers must have been too hard. The most over portion was the Santino Tea Time segment. I was disappointed not to see an RKO, 450 splash, or a label lock. The Miz was getting great babyface reaction, whereas nobody in the crowd got crunk or buck when R-Truth's new music hit. Reaction for Cena and Barrett was mixed, but Daniel Bryan was insanely over. Two Bryan chants, however, were started by me, but my Cole Likes Miners chant didn't catch on. I was upgraded seats for no extra charge to sit in the lower tier. Atmosphere was good, but the show I felt lacked a solid match. The dark match at the end was a triple threat for the WWE title with Orton, Barrett, and Sheamus. Barrett went to hit Orton with a title, who ducked, thus striking Sheamus. Orton grabbed the belt and hit Barrett for the win.
Daniel Longworth, I don't know about you guys, but I don't see any way how the Cena Nexus storyline doesn't end up with Cena being the leader and turning heel. Anything else would be pointless.
I disagree. I think the only outcome you can have is to have Cena win, or Cena somehow come out as the victor defeating Barrett. I don't even know if you need to make Barrett have the title.
I think they're going to I have a feeling they're going to put the title on Barrett at the Survivor Series. That's my feeling right now.
Yeah.
We'll see. Let's keep going here.
Oh, Steven M. Jensen. Hey, guys. A little backstory on Shawn Michaels having short hair and ugly brown tights. In his book, he states that his street fight with Hunter at SummerSlam was supposed to be a one-shot deal. But back then, in October of 2002, he was asked to cut a promo on Hunter at the WWE restaurant in Times Square. The promo got over so well that Vince told Shawn he wanted him to take part in the Elimination Chamber match at Survivor Series and win the title. Shawn said he was out of shape and had cut his hair, but Vince didn't care, so he went along with it. He wore jeans at SummerSlam simply because it was a street fight. No other reason. As for the brown tights at the Survivor Series, the WWE seamstress suggested earth tone tights for him, but ran out of time to complete them, so when he arrived at the show, all he had were the puke brown tights. He said Hunter, Stephanie, and his wife were trying not to laugh right before he went out there.
Earth tone tights.
Earth tone tights. I got a new gimmick for you, Sean. Earth tone tights. Why wasn't he able to wear his old tights?
Your comment you made last week. I think maybe coming after the Attitude Era, maybe people wouldn't have been into the whole
hearts.
Yeah. Like,
the crowd wouldn't be able to accept hearts on his tights.
You gotta remember, this is in New York City.
Yeah.
He's a baby face.
Yeah.
And he had not performed outside that SummerSlam match since before, like, the Attitude Era had started, where he was a heel at that point. I mean, could have got booed out of the building with those hearts.
With those tights? I think
I'm not saying the alternative was much better, but I can understand the hesitancy to go back to the hearts.
All right.
Okay. I mean, his theme music, his tights, it really doesn't lend itself to being a cool babyface.
Yeah, but he kept the theme music.
That's true. Okay, Jermone Jackson. I know it's been difficult to get Jeff Hardy over as a heel, but I have the perfect solution. He needs a manager or mouthpiece. Since he's in legal trouble, his mouthpiece could be his lawyer. Jeff should start wearing suits and let his lawyer do all the talking. Jeff could lose matches and the lawyer can find legal loopholes to keep the belt on him.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, that idea would probably be used.
Stephanie Kyle Gosun. Hey, wait, just so you know, and I hope I didn't just fuck your name up. Hey, Wade, just so you know, you are the first person ever to pronounce my full name correctly at first glance. You and John keep up the good work with all the reviews. You continue to make my weekly traveling between work and school much more bearable.
Josh Thomas. Hey, guys, finished listening to Review of Raw. You know something? I think a lot of people feel the way you guys do. Raw has gotten really boring lately. Having Cena and Orton on top for the last 4 years hasn't helped. There's almost never a clean finish. Wait, I mean there's hardly a finish anymore in any of the matches. The announcers shitting all over the roster doesn't help either. Now for Mania, I again agree. Sting, Goldberg, or Austin, it really doesn't matter because the next night it's back to the current roster. It's like they're saying they know wrestling isn't as good as it was 10 years ago, or maybe the storylines have gotten run into the ground. So fuck it. Throw in the towel. And lastly, speaking of Survivor Series, why wouldn't they have Bryan Danielson and Miz make each of their own Survivor Series teams this week or last week? Where's the harm in that? At least it's something. I feel at this point, unify all titles and end the brand split and make some needed cuts.
Yeah, I wouldn't be against that. Neither of them are booked on the show right now.
Yeah, Bryan no, and there's three matches booked heading into the week leading into it, and that's what we go back to. The WWE had 4 weeks here to promote this show, and with all of that time, what have they done with it? They've announced three matches, one of which is a throwaway women's match.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing on this card that's it's not been properly built.
All right. Sadiq Kocha. Great review as always. I attended Raw Live and it was good but not great. By far, Santino got the biggest pop of the night, mainly because everything he was saying the audience could relate to. The Kozlov chant was surreal, but I joined in what may be his first and last crowd chant. Cena and Barrett both had mixed reactions and Miz received a lot of cheers. The chant for Otunga was, "Who are ya?" which is used when the crowd basically doesn't give a fuck who you are.
Fantastic.
Thank you for that bit of information.
Ultimush Gazdar, hey guys, really enjoyed your Impact review. I am having an ultra shitty time of it last week thanks to issues at work, school, and finding out my ex was engaged. And your guys' take on the denouement of the RVD...
Denouement
of the RVD Dreamer segment on Impact had me laughing out loud for the first time in what seemed like forever. Thanks a lot for that. P.S. Have you guys considered doing a top 10 style show? Say the top 10 shittiest promos or feuds of all time. P.P.S. The Big Show's box office abortion is now available on DVD. Rip online in case you guys want to lose a few brain cells watching and reviewing it. You know, on top of that way, I know you've got a PBR. It is on Rogers On Demand now.
Already, yeah.
Knucklehead
for
$5.99.
Well, that's $5.99 that I will not be spending.
Nor will I.
Jack Pisco, finally. I actually laughed at Cena's joke about explaining himself. Gotta remember to use that line.
When are you gonna use that
line? How are
line?
You gonna use that line, Jack Pisco?
How is your gimmick created, Jack Pisco? Well, it's funny. I was named Jack Briscoe, and I don't know.
Not a memorable WWE Raw, to be sure, except for the Santino bit. That was definitely a best of 2010 moment for the Fed's DVD. Have you ever seen one of those best of DVDs, like Best of Raw or Best of SmackDown?
I'm sure I've seen bits and pieces at some point.
I guess if you're a big enough fan, I guess I would buy it, but I don't know.
No, I would never purchase one, though.
I enjoyed the Impact review very much, to the point where I laughed out loud at work when Way was going over the Samoa Joe segment. What did Gunnar and Murphy do to deserve being dropped on the microphone multiple times? Can't wait for the next Impact and Raw podcast. The band Saliva rules.
Oh, he's the one. So that brings us to a close of another show, Way.
Mm-hmm.
An epic edition here.
Jam-packed. My God.
Yeah. So we'll finish off here. It is your pick for next week, Way. So what would you like to review? Because we should also go over this week. You're on vacation.
I am. That's right. I am on vacation. And to celebrate my vacation, I would like to watch more wrestling. Next week, I would like to review the 1992 Survivor Series featuring the supposed main event of Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man Randy Savage, the Ultimate Maniacs versus Ric Flair and Razor Ramon.
Of course, Ultimate Warrior does not work this match.
Yes.
So we will get into all of that. Plus, we got Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels at the Survivor Series.
Oh, that's right.
On that card. All right, so next week it'll be the 92 Survivor Series, and Wei Ting is going to be off on vacation. So
I will be back.
He is returning. So for next week, we will still have all of our shows, and we'll be juggling it. It looks like Tuesday it might be a review alone with me.
Could be.
As you are going to be off into a vacation mode.
Well, we'll see. Maybe we'll get a cameo
from Way. Yeah. So we'll figure that out for next week. But then Survivor Series 92, if you've seen the show, if you want to throw in your feedback, go post it online at reviewaway.com on our Facebook group. keep harassing people to join the group. And we're going to finish off the show here. One of our listeners, Aram Nasrallah, he sent in a request for a song to go out here. So we are going to go out with Aram's request.
Brother.